Now that's why it's not too fair for us to pick on those disciples who almost every time they got a break and they were a little bit idle, they had one subject on their mind. What was that one subject? The kingdom. That because they read the Old Testament and they'd read those passages and they didn't see no gap in there. They saw the prophet saying, hey, the Messiah comes and the kingdom. And buddy, they were ready for the kingdom. They wanted him to kick the Romans out, set up his throne, and they were already vying for the right and the left hand. Weren't they? I mean, think about it. The day he's going to ascend into heaven, what are they asking him about? Lord, are you going to restore the kingdom at this time? They were totally clueless. They were oblivious to this entire parenthesis in here. Because that's the way they saw it from the Old Testament. They saw this peak and they saw that peak, but they didn't see any of this. Now I read H.A. Ironside. He was a tremendous Bible teacher. He, of course, he wrote in the earlier 1900s, in the days when travel by train was so much more popular than obviously than it is today. And he gave the illustration of a train that's on the track. It's moving along steadily, though maybe slowly. It's got a goal in mind. Then word comes. There's a passenger special coming that needs right away. So they take this train that's been on this track. It's been traveling a long time. They take this train off on a side track and they park it. And it sits there and waits until this passenger special comes roaring by. And once the passenger special has roared by, then they take the same old train that's been traveling all this long time and they put it back on the main track and it resumes its journey. So Israel started out this train journey a long time ago. They got on the track. God started working them down the prophetic railroad, so to speak. And they got all the way to here. And then when the Messiah came and they rejected him and killed him, God said, all right. And he moved Israel off the track and put them on the sideline. And he waited now for the church age special to come roaring out of the past and come rushing by. And once the church age special rushes by, Israel gets to get back on the track. But until the gospel special goes by, they got to sit on the sideline. All right, so Israel was that original train. They had the law, the prophets, the judges, the kings, and Jesus. Now the church age is that special, where God deals specifically with the Gentiles while Israel has been put aside. Amen. This is borne out by not only by this obvious prophetic parenthesis in Old Testament prophecies, but, I mean, even in the New. Here we are living in this gap of grace. And Paul takes chapters 9, 10, and 11 of Romans and explains to the Gentiles, hey, don't get proud, don't get boastful. Israel were the original people of God. And then God cut them off. He cut off those natural branches. He put them off the tree. And he reached out there and he got you and he grafted you in. And now you're growing. But their time's not over yet. He said now, he talks about the restoration is going to come back to Israel. God is not completely finished with Israel. They are simply on hold. Okay. Brother Heath, years ago, as my hermeneutics teacher said, don't ever say. And I said all that to say this. But he's not here to hear me today. And I said all that, however long it took. I said all that to say this. These prophecies in Daniel's 70th week have nothing to do with the church age. God plainly said to Daniel, these weeks are for thy people. Who are his people? The Jews. And these prophecies are for thy holy city. What was his holy city? Jerusalem. Amen. And so I believe that these prophecies, this prophecy, amen, that God lined out fully and in great detail, it will not begin again. It will not pick up and continue until this parenthesis is over. Amen. Until this church age is over. When it has been completed, then Well, let's talk about the final event now, the final fulfillment of this prophetic parenthesis. Amen. I believe that the final event in this parenthesis is the rapture of the church. Amen. Because it fits right in between everything else God is doing. God is going to take His church out of this world. Amen. And that will complete the parenthesis. Amen. It will bring the church age as we know it to an end and usher in then again God's dealings with Israel. And He will again pick up His dealing with that and go back into that prophecy that Daniel saw. It has not all been completed yet, but it will be. Now, again, this has already been talked about, but in Revelation chapter 1. In chapter 1, John sees a vision of Christ. And in verse number 19, John is told to write about three things. Number one, he is told, write the things which thou hast seen. Number two, he is told, write the things which are. And number three, he's told, write the things which shall be hereafter. Clearly, things yet in the future. So Revelation 1, he wrote down what he had seen. He was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and he saw the glorified Christ walking among the candlesticks of the church. Amen. He had that wonderful vision of the glorified Lord. That's what he had seen. Now, he moves to chapters 2 and 3 and writes the things which are. Amen. Because in John's day, there were seven churches that he wrote to existing in Asia. Amen. But Revelation 4 and beyond, then are the things that shall be hereafter. Now, Brother Darius mentioned this last night. I'm going to tell you what. He preached an outstanding message to all of us about the danger of the Laodicean spirit. And I told him after church, it was great preaching. And he made a wonderful point there that probably he didn't dwell on it, and it might pass us by. But when you study Revelation 2 and 3, there's a whole lot of truth in there. It cannot be passed over lightly. Amen. Those chapters in Revelation 2 and 3 are letters written to an existing church in John's time. No doubt about it. Ephesus was a church. He wrote that letter to that church. And so with Smyrna and Sardis and Pergamos and Thyatira and all down the line. Every one of those churches got a letter in their mail, however they had their mail. They got their letter from John for that specific church. But that's not all. Amen. Each of those letters has a universal message to the church at any time. Amen. They transcend just that existing church of that day. And they are a message to all the church of all time while we're in that parenthesis. Amen. There are times the church needs to hear about leaving their first love like Ephesus did. They need to hear about having a name they're alive when they're really dead like Sardis was. Amen. They need to hear about Thyatira where they allow the laity to rule the church and women to take places they don't belong and all of that. Amen. All of those are universal messages to the church at any time. And then again, every letter has a message to every individual believer of all times. Amen. Individual believers like you and me need to be told, hey, don't leave your first love. Don't have a name you're alive when you're dead. Amen. Don't be lukewarm. Amen. All those messages have a message to the individual believer. And, see, I told you there's a whole lot in those letters. Not only to the existing church and to the universal church and to every individual believer, but each letter to the church represents a period in the history of the church as it makes its way through this parenthesis.